for another day or another evening or middle of the night.
Another week.
Well, yeah, it's Monday, isn't it?
All day.
What day it was. McCowan Shannon with you on the podcast/radio program. He's one of our favorites, and we catch him in an unusual circumstance, a rare circumstance. Mm-hmm. The president of the Vegas Golden Knights, George McPhee, joins us today, watching the playoffs rather than participating in them. And that has only happened, I think, once or twice in his career. Mm-hmm. McPhee, this time, after these messages. McCowan and Shannon back with you. Our guest today is doing something he is not used to doing. While sitting and talking to us while the Stanley Cup playoffs are going on. Under normal circumstances, George McPhee and the Vegas Golden Knights would be participating. They have every other year they've existed. But here we are, a week or so into the postseason, and your team's not on the ice. What's it like? A little unusual, I guess, huh?
Keeps you humble.
Well, yeah, for sure.
It's a good league, and if you don't perform your best at all times, this is what can happen.
It's not just Vegas, not just your time in Vegas, George. I mean, your tenure in Washington, you had a pretty good run there too, didn't you?
Yeah, I think we missed the playoff. Missed the playoffs when we rebuilt the team. We made the playoffs six straight years, and then we missed that one year, and that cost me my job. And then I went and worked for the Islanders for 2 years, made the playoffs both years, and actually had some fun with Team Canada as well, with a couple of world championship gold medals. So it was a pretty good run. But, it's not easy. It is not easy.
Well, I'm guessing this one is probably the most unexpected of these occurrences during the course of your career. You had to think, and I think the rest of us thought, that not only were the Golden Knights going to be a good hockey team, they would quite possibly even probably contend for the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, it may have been our best team. We'll never know now. But and typically, you know, at the end of the season, you try to figure out, you know, well, why didn't it work for us? And trying to sort out all the whys. But this one's pretty easy for me, and I've never used this before, but it, you know, the injuries, just they're not an excuse. It was a fact this year. It was just a fact that seemed to wreck everything we tried to do. And we had 513 games lost. It just, sometimes you just, that's just what it was.
Yeah. And one of those ones that doesn't really get talked about very much was probably one of the most drastic ones, and that was Alec Martinez. You know, how many nights did you miss him on the back end when you think about his value to your hockey club? And that was a scary injury, George.
Yeah, he's it's interesting because he said one of the reasons he stayed with us and re-signed as a free agent with us was because he was really impressed. You know, not it was a good team, but he really liked our medical department and our sports performance department. And he basically said, you know, if I wasn't with this team and this happened this year, I don't know if I'd ever got back to playing. And so he went through a lot. It was a really difficult year for him. And he has played so well for this team, been a great leader on this team. Just one of the many guys that we missed.
Well, it raises the question for me, George. When you're in your position as president of the hockey club and certainly involved with personnel and overall decisions as to which direction to go, when your team underperforms, it's easy to say, okay, we need to make some change. And I don't know whether you felt like your team underperformed or whether you could even evaluate whether they underperformed because of the number of injuries you had. But how does it change your perspective on next year? Can you simply say, well, we had lost 500 plus games. This was ridiculous. We're generally happy with what we have. We're going to try and stick with what we have. Is that your perspective?
Yeah, you can't overreact. I still think there are always ways and, you know, to improve your team if you can. So you have to keep looking at those. And we're not finished with our analysis of this last season. We there's lots of things you can go through. And what could we have done better? And what things, you know, we'll just never know about because we, you know, we just never had a chance to do it. Like, good, you know, we had our best line in training camp was Carrier, Nick Waugh, and Kolesar. In all our scrimmages, they were really good. They were good in the preseason. We got two periods out of them as a line this year. And it wasn't until the 78th game of the regular season. They were either injured or had to play on different lines because we were so short up top. But we thought as a fourth line, they would be outstanding because they're a real puck possession group and kept the puck deep in the offensive zone. And we got to game 78 before we could play them together. And Kolesar was hurt before the end of the second period. So that's the kind of thing we went through. So how do you evaluate? It's hard, but we will. And when we get through everything, we'll put together a plan. And again, make sure we don't overreact.
That discussion about evaluating, did you literally take 4 or 5 days saying, listen, everybody go their own way for 5 days? Or how have you managed it? It's only been 10 days since the regular season ended. How have you managed that expectation?
Well, you have to get to the players quickly because they leave town often to go play in the World Championships or to get a break in. And so Kelly has met with all the players, had extensive exit interviews. And then Kelly has met with the coaches twice now. And then he and I we're meeting this week, and then we'll meet with Bill by the end of the week or next week. And then we'll sort of have all of our, that part of our analysis done. We've got to still sit with our analytics group and so on, but it takes several weeks sometimes to get through it.
Tell me about
trying to do it fast.
Tell us about exit interviews. I'm intrigued as to, you know, what kinds of conversations do you have? I mean, Kelly's going to do it now. You're general manager, but you've done it for years and years and years. Yep. What do you ask them?
Easy stuff. What'd you think of your year? And let them talk about their year individually. And then, you know, that leads to other things. You know, this is, as a manager, what I saw. Analytically, this is what we saw that either is consistent with what you're saying or it's not. So you have those discussions. And then you talk about the team, not necessarily in this order, but you talk about the team. How is the medical staff? How is the equipment staff? How is your relationship with the coaches? What can we do better? Organization, is there anything we can do better? Is there anything that you did with a former club that they're doing better than us, and how can we get there? All of those kinds of things, and it can go in all kinds of directions.
Is Peter involved in any of them?
He has his own interviews with the players.
He does.
So they get all through that. And then Kelly, I believe, met with the coaches before they interviewed the players, before Kelly interviewed the players, and then they get together with the coaches after. And there's a lot to be learned.
How receptive would you say you are to the opinions of the players? I mean, they obviously, some of them at least, will have a different point of view from you. You want to listen. But if there's a minority that have one opinion and it's different from yours, you're not under any pressure to take that opinion. How do you absorb all of this stuff?
No, well, you know, it's in terms of my management style, I have always wanted to hear from everybody. Everybody gets, I want everybody's input. You know, especially upstairs when you're sitting in meetings with pro scouts or the amateur scouts, the analytics guys and so on, you get input from everybody. And you eventually get to a place where you're thinking you're making the right decision. And you've got to encourage people to feel comfortable to speak up, and you get through it. But at the end of the day, every once in a while, if you can't get there as a group, that's the job of the manager or the president to, you know, go into his office, close the door, and make a tough decision.
Figure it out.
Yep.
Who taught you that? Was that Pat?
I think I just, yeah, Pat was good that way. Pat Quinn was really good that way, having all the guys in and making people feel comfortable. And it's, you know, you hire all these really talented people, analytics staff and video people, and again, your scouts and other front office people. Make sure you listen to them and create that environment where they're comfortable speaking up and contributing. And it's interesting, you know, when you have the young guys, I always have the young guys that are, you know, helping us with video, helping us with the war room. They're in on every meeting because it's how they learn. And they basically just get a PhD by absorbing and listening over the years. But after a little while, they start having their own thoughts and their own comments, and they're good. They help. So that's the way I historically done it. And it feels right to do it that way to me. And nobody has to raise their voice. You don't have to argue. Just have some good debates and good discussions.
I read an article recently from some stained wretch, and I can't remember whether it was, I really don't remember who it was, whether it was one of your local guys or a national reporter who said, well, time for Vegas to tear it down and start over again for the first time. That's almost, even if you were inclined to do that, and I don't think you are, but even if you're inclined to do that, that is almost an impossibility with the quality of talent you've got and with the payroll you've got. True or not?
Yeah, I don't think I'd ever be inclined to do that. And you're right. It's not easy to move contracts and so on. And this may have been the best team we've ever had. And we've worked hard to get here. I remember, and I may have had this discussion with you in the past, but interviewing Bob Clark and Doug Risebrow at different times, mm-hmm. because both had yep. expansion teams. And the one takeaway that Doug Risebrow had was, you know, you're going to love that team that played for you in the first year. But if there are opportunities in the off season to make your team better, you've got to make the hard decisions and make those moves if you want to win a cup. And I think he was sort of lamenting that maybe he didn't, got maybe a little sentimental. And we've been aggressive and we've worked hard at it. And, you know, you look at our top line of Pacioretty, Stevenson, Stone. We traded for all three players. And that line, when they're healthy and playing, is one of the top three lines analytically in the league. So we've been aggressive with that and with free agency and so on and making those hard decisions. And we think we've got a pretty darn good club. And but for, a really tough year when it comes to injuries. We thought we could have had a good run in the playoffs if we got there.
Yeah, the whole concept that what year one was the misfits was, you know, everybody came to town and they were, well, for want of a better word, they were everybody else's rejects. You came together and you created a bond and you built that. But it was difficult to change that, but you have changed that. And have you had to manage expectations of your players? Because you don't have everybody making between $2 and $4.5 million anymore. You got guys making $750,000 and $10 million. Yeah. Does that change for you?
It shouldn't change your culture. And if it does, then that's on you as a management group. To make sure that the culture is still the right culture. And it was easy to get the right culture going when we got here because we had Bill Foley, who we borrowed from his military experience in West Point. And you know, I remember David Poyle saying, you know, you're never going to have more fun than your first year. And Doug Rajbrawal saying, you can really establish your culture in that first year because everybody's going to buy in. Everybody's, you know, they've been rejected. This is, they're getting a second opportunity and they're going to buy into whatever you want to do. And we laid a pretty good foundation down that first year and with video and a presentation to the players and everything else, about what we're going to be. And it set the culture pretty darn good. And you know what, in our first 4 years, we played in 11 playoff rounds. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of hockey.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, you know, so I think we've been doing the right things. And I think we, again, had a real good team this year. It just wasn't in the cards for us.
Now that the season's over for you, when was the first time you and Kelly sat down and said, hey, maybe we should think about Jack Eichel?
That came up in the summer, and there were some discussions, but it really didn't go anywhere. I think they talked a little bit in August. I can't even remember what months we traded for him, Channy, but I do know it picked up in September again in October, and it was going to be a hard one to do because it was going to take a lot of assets to get him and then get him in under the cap and everything else. But we were confident that we could do both. And it's really hard to get an elite number one center in this league.
Mm-hmm.
And, so we thought it was the right thing to do and made it so.
And what do you know about Eichel now that you didn't know before?
Oh, that's a good question. I think he is what we thought he was. He is a very, very genetically gifted guy, very talented guy. He's a good player. He really loves the game. I guess I didn't know enough about that. Like, he is typically the first guy on ice for practice and always the last guy off. He stays out. And he works really hard. He was productive for us. What most people probably wouldn't know is that he really had he broke his thumb in a bad way about 3 or 4 weeks into his return. It was non-displaced, so he didn't have to have surgery, but it was a bad fracture. And the guy didn't miss a game. He toughed it out. We had to numb him up, and it wasn't easy because when that wore off, he was in a lot of pain. But he toughed it out for 6 weeks with that.
Wow.
Can I just ask, I just wanted to find the Eichel, what did you see and how much did you investigate the surgeries? Because when you traded for him, there was never a question in your mind that he would have the artificial disc replacement. And yet that was the big issue in Buffalo. Was that just a discussion with your medical staff that said, hey, no, this isn't going to be a problem? Was there something about, you know, MMA is big in Vegas, so the doctors understand it because MMA athletes have had a lot of it. How did that work?
We did as much research as you could do, and boy, there weren't many second thoughts. It just seemed to be a great advancement in modern medicine, and it was, you know, as procedures go, it sounded like it was pretty simple, but it's more elaborate than people would know. Within a week, the young fella with the Hawks had the same, Tyler Johnson,
yeah.
The same surgery. And the day after the surgery, Jack was standing in the hall passing pucks with somebody and had on the goggles that help you with the vestibular and ocular stations and he was lifting heavy. He probably could have come back a little bit earlier than he did, but we just wanted to make sure that, you know, the surgery really went well. Let's give it a few more weeks and do it right to make sure he never has anything to worry about. And he got drilled a few times this year, no issues whatsoever. So that part of it really seemed at the time, we just weren't that worried about it.
Well, I wanted to follow, I was kind of jumping in there, but I wanted to ask a question along the same lines. So here's a young kid with great talent who hasn't played in quite a while. You get him. He has the surgery. He has to rehab. How long before you watched him play where you weren't nervous about what might happen?
Probably just a game or two, Bob, because
really,
yeah, because he had been on the ice a lot with us and you know, non-contact and so on. And again, after some of the UFC guys had said about, you know, their procedures and then get back in the ring and they're fighting and land on their heads and everything else. I was more concerned about how long is it going to take him to get back on his game? You know, missing that year is like, you know, you're trying to jump onto a moving train and it's not easy to just assimilate that quickly. And unfortunately he got going and he was productive, but then he broke a thumb and I don't know how he played with it, but he did.
The medical advisory has a guy named Mark Lindsay out of Ottawa. How many times would you have talked to Mark in that period of time after the surgery? Was that an everyday occurrence? How's he doing today?
I'm sorry?
Mark Lindsay, his physio guy, the guy when he went to Carolina?
Right. Yeah, I don't know if he's what kind of contact he has with him now, but...
Did you talk to those people on a daily basis? How was your communication?
Yeah. Well, Kelly did. Obviously, Jay Millett, our director of sports performance, would be dealing with him every day. But we did make sure that we wanted to get Jack out here to meet everybody right after the trade, then have the surgery and go. We sent him to South Carolina, and he worked with him. And then when he was in a place where we could then take over, we let him go home for Christmas from Carolina and then come out here. And then he was with us the rest of the way.
Speaking of injuries, and I hate to keep going back to injuries, but that really was the story of your team this year. How is your goaltender? I assume you have been in communication with him.
Yep. Kelly's talked to him. He had successful surgery last week. We thought it was something that he might be able to play with, tough it out, and it just got to the point where he couldn't. He was struggling, wasn't on his game, didn't feel comfortable. And so, you know, something you're hoping you could wait until the end of the year to do, like you can with some players. Every year you have, at the end of a season, three or four guys go into the auto body shop and get cleaned up. Mm-hmm. It's not unlike he had the other shoulder done last season at the end of the season. So he should be ready for the start of the season.
George, I know this might be a prickly subject, but are you concerned about his relationship with Peter?
I'm not.
No?
No, there's been some noise about that.
Yeah.
People get over it. And really it was about his ability to play because we were going game to game there, you know, can he play? Can he not play? Are you comfortable? And it wasn't easy. And then, you know, he just wasn't on his game and he just couldn't play the way he wanted to play. So I had to shut it down.
Assuming he's your number one goaltender going forward, and I'm not trying to suggest he wouldn't be, are you comfortable with what you have behind him?
Yes, Brossoit played well for us, but ended up having his own injury.
Right. So,
as you know, our first and second string goaltenders were out down the stretch. And Logan Thompson came in and played real well. We've really liked the way he's played. He was terrific in the American League. And he came up and he gave us a chance to win games. He was good.
I see that the Thompson story really is amazing when you think about it and his journey from the Brandon Wheat Kings, the official farm team of, sorry, George, of the Vegas Golden Knights, and then to go to, well, how many guys? Come on now. And then to go to Brock University and the East Coast League. And I just noticed he got picked for Team Canada for the World Hockey Championship.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Really, really good for him.
It really is quite a journey to something that it's kind of a really good feel-good hockey story, isn't it?
Well, it gives everybody hope, right? Everybody that's trying to make it to the NHL, there are all kinds of different ways to get there. And, there just aren't enough good goalies to go around. There aren't enough good players to go around. And if you show that you've got something, someone's going to give you a chance.
It's kind of like guys that used to go to Bowling Green and, got a chance and got to play, and right?
Yeah, yeah. Your
old coach retired this year.
Yeah, that was a surprise. He sent me a text that morning, and I said, I don't know whether to be really happy for you or sad for you. But he said, no, I'm good. I don't have to deal with referees anymore.
we're obviously talking about Jerry York. So he was went on to one of the schools in the Boston area as one of the great college coaches of all time, in the Hockey Hall of Fame now too. But yeah, one of his first success stories was George McPhee at Bowling Green. So,
well, I think Dave Taylor's probably the first success story.
Well, I was at Clarkson.
Yeah, coached him at Clarkson, and Dave ended up being a heck of a player and a real good executive.
We want to take a break with George McPhee, the president of the Vegas Golden Knights. We'll change gears a little bit, talk a bit about the playoffs when we come back after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon on the radio program and podcast with George McPhee, the president of the Vegas Golden Knights. For the first time since he's been in Vegas, he's sitting watching. Or are you sitting watching? Do you pay attention to the playoffs now that this is over, or get away from hockey? No?
Yeah, I've actually, the first couple nights were tough, but, and it does come back when you're watching games, but I've enjoyed watching the games.
At least you're not yelling at referees and hockey ops.
Oh, no, you're still yelling at them.
But you can't watch as a fan, McPhee. You have to watch as a vested observer.
Yeah. You're trying to watch everything. You're trying to be analytical. You are trying to, is there a trend out there that you may want to pick up on and try yourself? It's just such a good league, and the games are so good that you can just be a fan sometimes as well.
What are you enjoying then? What's when you think of it, what's jumping out at you?
Probably everything. It's just it's still as good as teams can be. It can still come down. It's the guy in the net.
Yeah.
I could not believe how well the guy in St. Louis played in that first game against Minnesota. Holy cow, it was good.
Billy Husso, yeah.
Yeah, and just watching the kid in Dallas, Jake Ottinger, a real good person. I know him from the U.S. program, and my son, and boy, he's been really good. And then you're looking at these third stringers, and they're hanging in there.
The speed of George, the one thing I would say is, I watched the Oilers, I've watched the Oilers most of the season. And every time I think the Oilers are fast, and LA comes at them last night and they're faster. The speed of the game is phenomenal. How has that happened? Is it just rules?
No, I don't think it's just rules. I think that's just you. If you want to play in the league, you've got to be pretty elite in a lot of regards. I mean, if you're going to play in this league, you got to be a really good hockey player.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of teams have emphasized speed over the years. And we came in, our first year team was really, really fast.
Yeah.
And opened some eyes and people tried to follow suit.
We could talk about each series individually, and maybe John will get to that, or I'm sure he has some specific questions about some of the things you've seen. But one of the overall points of conversation during these playoffs, generically, has been the refereeing and the number of penalties that are being called. We are all of an era when the playoffs came, the referees, for the most part, put the whistles away. It was not unusual to see three minor penalties in a playoff game. And a lot of stuff that was called during the regular season is not called or was not called during the playoffs. And we periodically debated the merit of that, but it was a given. That's how the game was played. That's sure not the way they're refereeing right now. In fact, some would say it's gone completely the other direction. I'm very intrigued by your perspective on it. And are you surprised by what you've seen?
Yeah, there have been a lot of calls, and you know, I'm more inclined to want them to let them play. There are some things that you just don't have to call, and I'd rather let them play. I haven't seen much of it, but I don't like the thing that always bothers me going in the playoffs is, you know, I worry about guys on the other team that dive a lot and draw a lot of penalties. And I always want the referees to be on top of that. Don't allow that to happen. And I go back to a series that we lost when I was in Washington to Montreal. We're up 3-1. We lost the series. But the first game, the referees called the same player twice in the game for embellishing. And for the rest of the series, there was none of that. It was great. It was just good hockey to watch and so on. That's usually my biggest beef. I haven't seen a lot of it, but I have seen a lot of stuff that just doesn't need to be called. You know, if it's a scoring chance, that's an issue. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, you know, focus on flow and safety of the players.
Does it concern you that there have been so many games really decided by special teams, George?
Yeah. I don't love it. I'd rather, you know, again, I'd like to see a lot of 5-on-5 play, and you know, it's I've always been irked by teams that, you know, that may not be a good 5-on-5 team, but they've got 4 or 5 guys that make up a good power play, mm-hmm. and they win a lot of games as a result. I'm more interested in an overall team game than just.
But how do you do that without allowing liberties? And that isn't that the fine line?
Yeah, it always has been.
Yeah,
it's you know, this having good referees with good feel, and you know, the good referees are like good players. The game comes to them, and they have a, you know, they manage it well. Actually, I shouldn't say manage, but they referee it well. I don't like when they manage games. I like when they referee it. But I you know, and it's, you know, that you've got some teams that have made the playoffs, but you know, they're not going to get to that second round, and you're going to have some referees that don't get to that second round. And when you're in the second round, everything gets a little bit better.
Well, here's the thing for me. He will go nameless, but we had a senior executive from the NHL on, and I asked him about this very thing. This is before the playoffs started. You know, do you direct your referees, your officials, as to how to call games differently in the playoffs than the regular season? Because it used to happen. I don't think anybody would deny it. There was a different set of rules when the playoffs came. And he says, well, we don't do that. How is it possible that you have 8 or 10 officiating crews right now across North America covering, calling games, and they're all doing the same thing? There isn't a crew that I have seen that is calling the game the way they used to call them. And that suggests to me there's only one answer for that. That's what they were told. This is how they're told to do it.
Yeah.
Is that a mistake on the part of the NHL? I mean, first of all, do you agree with my assessment?
I do. I think, you know, I don't think there's any doubt that someone you know, that they're talked to before the playoffs start. They are probably congratulated by the league for getting to this point, that you are getting playoff games, and they'll go over things that you know, there are certain expectations that the league will want. Some things have slipped, some things haven't. Let's focus on this. Let's, you know, I don't think there's any doubt that that happens. It happens with the managers. They're all on the phone with the league before the playoffs start. Congratulations for getting here. And let's do the right things. Let's say the right things. Let's, if you've got issues, don't go public with it. Go talk to the supervisor. And the supervisors matter in these things. The guys that stay in the whole series, different crews will come in and out, but the supervisor is there for the whole series. And not unlike players and teams and referees, the supervisors get better as the playoffs go along as well.
That brings up an interesting point, because for all those years that you were the manager, you guys had a lot of influence on the way the game was called. You know, your Florida meetings in March were always, okay, what do we need to fix? What do we need to focus on? Is it important to have the managers involved, because they all, you all have vested interests in this thing, you know, as opposed to an overarching philosophy?
Yeah, I still, and that's what's unique about the GM's position in the NHL. Not only are you looking after a team and trying to build a winning team, but you're a guardian of the game. There's a huge responsibility there. And I don't think personally that I learned enough about or thought enough about that side of it when I first became a GM. And maybe it wasn't important because you had the older guys, whether it's Sinden or Fletcher or Torrey or Clark, you know, some of the Sather, some of the lions of the game that were there sort of looking after it. They'd been around whatever we were discussing. They'd probably already seen it a few times. But I know as I got a little older and more experienced, you thought more in those terms. And again, it's you need different perspectives and different inputs. You need input from the referees, from the people that are running the referees, from Gary Bettman and Bill Daly, from players, from managers, from coaches, and take it all in and decide what kind of game you want and what's best for the game.
Any thoughts as to how, since this topic has come up and we're like barely midway through the first round, this topic of how the games are being refereed, Would they change as the playoffs go? These playoffs go along.
I think it could. Yeah, I think that the adjustments will be made. Yeah. And the first round is usually the wildest round with all kinds of things going on. It's typically more physical than some of the other rounds, and it's, you know, there's a lot going on. Everybody's pretty frisky going into the playoffs, and they get physical. And it's not to say that the other rounds aren't physical, but things settle down and there's, I think, a rhythm to it.
It's funny. I was talking to somebody the other day and they said, you know, to win the Stanley Cup, you need 16 victories. And when you think about 16 wins, it doesn't sound very long. It doesn't sound very hard. But you've been to the Stanley Cup final more than once with your teams in Washington and in Vegas. It's a long time, isn't it? This 2 months is arduous.
Yes, because it's usually play, day off. And it is a commitment physically and mentally. And it's interesting. I was talking to Kenny Holland about a month ago when we were in Edmonton, and he said something like, you know, they're in any given playoff year, like you've got all these good teams at the start of the year. Everybody's got a good staff, good coaches, good medical, good training, everything. And everybody's trying to do the same thing. And he said, you know, you start with 32 teams, but only four teams win two playoff rounds. When you think about it, from that perspective, that's really hard.
Yeah.
You know, it's that's not much. You know, it's like I think about what we did in winning, or not winning, but playing in 11 playoff rounds mm-hmm. in 20 years. Pretty darn good. But when he said that, I had never heard it expressed that way before. And he was absolutely right. It's because everybody takes heat, you know, but try a team that wins two rounds.
Yeah.
Would you like to see more teams in the playoffs?
I'm fine with the way it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think
that's two of us on this conversation, George. Two of us like it that way.
Yeah. Well,
our buddy here doesn't.
And why do you think we would add more? Should add more?
Well, first of all, we're now at 50%. Half the teams get in, half the teams don't. It was not that long ago there were 21 teams in the NHL and 16 made the playoffs.
I remember those. Yeah.
and what have the other sports done? Baseball's expanded, NFL has expanded, NBA has expanded. Now, do I like the idea of extra teams being in the postseason? Not necessarily. But especially in a sport like baseball, and to half the extent, hockey, because essentially you play half the same number of games. If you're in a market where you don't sell out and you got a chance to make the playoffs, those games in the last 2-3 weeks of the season have a chance to be really important games, and you'll fill the house. And then you add a game or two extra and a playoff at the end. You know, okay, is it fair? No, but you know, I can also remember when there were 20 teams in Major League Baseball and the American League champion played the National League champion and there were no playoffs. You went from the regular season to the World Series. So everything evolves.
Yeah.
And I think the evolution of the other sports, I wonder whether there's a certain stubbornness on Gary's part or maybe the owners to keep it the way it is, just not to look like you're following the trend.
Yeah, I have a little different perspective or thought on it, and I worry about some sports at different times, and I guess particularly the NFL, because I don't find the in-arena experience, the NFL, or the in-stadium experience, a great one. They're just
it's horrible.
So many timeouts, so many stoppages.
Yeah.
And when you're and so are you doing things just for the money? Like are you adding more playoffs teams in the NFL and baseball because you're going to make more money? Or is it really what's best for the game? Like right now, I think the NHL is a great game. And it's hard to get into the playoffs. You got to be a good team. But the hockey all year long is pretty darn good.
Yeah.
The playoffs, from what I've seen, you know, just watching here, like, it's great stuff to watch. It's great.
And how many times in the month of April, George, did you turn to somebody and say, "Hey, this is a playoff game tonight for us"? I mean, the intensity of your fans, the intensity of what your team had to go through the last 12 games of the season just to get close.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was as good as a playoff series.
Yeah. And I thought the hockey all year long this year was good. I just think it's a really good league. And I know Bob's expression about happiness. If you're happy, don't fool around with it. And I think the league is pretty darn good. Why fool around with it? Again, I see, you know, with some sports, they're just doing too many things because it generates money. And why can't you just think about the game from time to time? Does it always have to be about more money?
Well,
about the game and make it a really good game. And if it's a really good game, the money will be there.
I respect your opinion. And I agree with the latter part of it. Yeah. However,
with all due respect, George.
Yeah.
No, it's one man's opinion. And
No.
I may not be right.
I love you, and I respect your opinion, which is why we're talking about it. But if you'd come to the East, you would have seen 8 teams that were going to make the playoffs without question by 1st of March. Maybe before that, Shannon.
That's right. So don't reward the other teams that are 20 points behind by giving them a playoff.
Well, that's one way to put it.
That's the way, best way to put it.
Well, or do you give them and their fan base an opportunity to dangle a carrot in front of them and say, you know, there's an outside chance. And so still come to those last 20 home games.
You know what they get dangled with? Sorry to hijack the conversation, George, but you know what they get dangled with? Tuesday night's draft lottery. That's what they get dangled with.
Well.
Yeah. And just because it's happened 1 year, are we going to change things because the East was like that this year? You know,
right.
It could be great fun to watch next year if some teams fizzle a little bit and other teams that were below them this year improve. So,
well,
I thought it was a great race in the West. You know,
was.
Well, it was. Yeah. We'll agree to disagree on that point, and perhaps we'll pop something cold at one point and continue the conversation in a little more rigor. But we're going to let you go. Hey, it's cool there in Vegas, huh? Mid-20s for the next couple of days.
Yeah, well, that's 70. Yeah, it was 70 degrees here this morning. Beautiful. It was 80s and 90s to the last 10 days or so, but that windstorm came through, and when I took the dog out this morning, it's a little perfect, but it's perfect.
Well, if there's any golf in your future, do it in the next few days. I just checked the weather forecast. It's going to be 40 by next week in Vegas. That's a little toasty for golf. Yeah. But you've experienced all this already.
Yeah, you get used to it.
So. You do.
It's a dry heat. It's a dry heat.
Yeah, it's hot though. We thank you as always for taking the time.
Gentlemen,
for us.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll leave you for the summertime and hopefully get in touch again next season. Thank you, George.
Look forward to it. Have a great summer, guys. Thank you.
You too. George McPhee, we'll come back after these messages. Our thanks to George McPhee for joining us. Always a pleasure. Did you watch Kentucky Derby on the weekend by any chance? Did you see the replay or what?
Oh, no. I was watching. It was quite a story.
The horse didn't get a call until he took the lead. Did you know that?
Yeah. No. I watched. Well, let's get a call. Bob, he didn't know until 30 minutes before the actual draw was made for the final grouping on Friday,
or forget to get in the race, but he never got a call from. He never got a call from the announcer. Never mentioned
far
until
he
took the lead. The announcer, if you watch the replay of it, and I've done it a couple times just to make sure.
Yeah,
there were the two horses. The two of the favorites were 1-2, and then there was a horse coming from the outside who never got there. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't until he took the lead that he actually got a call. And second longest shot ever to win the Kentucky Derby, 80-1. Holy cow!
Holy cow! Did you? How much did you put on him?
Not a nickel. I don't bet on the horse races unless I'm there. And
you weren't there. You weren't in Louisville.
I was. Well, no. If I'm at the track. I don't think. Well, I may have made one or two bets down at George Bigliardi's when he had an off track deal there, but I don't remember if I did, to tell you the truth. Anyway, we mentioned Barry Trotz getting fired
Removed from his position, yeah.
Same thing.
I just don't.
I've been removed from a few positions in my time.
As have I, which is why I try to be a little
up?
More.
Where's Trotz
wind up? You know, Winnipeg. That's my at first blush. He's a Manitoba guy, Dauphin. The Jets know they need, you know, a jolt. Barry would certainly give them a jolt. And I suspect that if I'm Mark Chipman and the Winnipeg Jets and Kevin Cheveldayoff, I'd be on that phone to Barry Trotz today.
Well, it'd be hard to argue. I mean, anybody who hired him. You know, it'd be hard to argue. I'm quite surprised that he got fired. I don't know the specific reasons, although I gather there were some internal issues.
I don't know if there were internal issues. Lou doesn't like to lose. And they lost this year. And you know, Lou needs to, you know, shake things up. You know, they've got tickets to sell in the new building. And I think that's important.
I was reluctant to ask this question of our guest, Mr. McPhee, but do you think that Pete DeBoer is safe in Vegas?
Well, I mean, the fact that George did tell us that the process they're going through is going to take another week to 10 days. But I also think when we asked him about his relationship with Robin Leonard, he said, yeah, don't worry, they'll get over it. I think Pete's fine. I really do.
You do?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think that, you know, George is obviously very, you know, he's not going to give us any state secrets, but I think that the fact that he said that, that Pete and Robin would be fine, I think there was an indication of something that's going to be okay.
And where do you think Bruce Boudreau winds up? Does he stay in Vancouver?
Well, here we are on the 9th
of May. But
we're on the 9th of May, so it's like the Iran hostage crisis. We're a date 22 days to go before Bruce has to declare. You know, I'm going to go out and say it. I think he's back in Vancouver. He's going to be back in Vancouver. He's going to keep the job. Because you don't know how long other jobs are going to be available. Bruce can't go out searching for other jobs unless people approach him. So we'll have to see what happens.
Well, it's such a weird situation. But I think I may be 100% wrong. I understand your point of view and I accept it. But
yeah,
Gabby's got Gabby's
the one team
stubborn.
I would watch. The one team I would watch is Philadelphia. Chuck Fletcher is the general manager in Philadelphia. He was the general manager in Minnesota when Bruce got hired. Chuck hired him on the phone, if you remember, the phone.
I do.
And Bruce's summer home is in Hershey, Pennsylvania. So that, to me, is the only thing that kind of sits with me is that Bruce Boudreau ends up being the coach of the Flyers. But, you know, that's me just playing a hunch.
I got you. Tomorrow, Corey Connors, who has become one of the most consistent players on the PGA Tour and really close to becoming a really great player on the tour. We'll talk to him. We hope you'll join us. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan, see ya.